It's good to see each of you tonight. I'm glad you're here. I hope you've been having a good week so far. And the challenge from Sunday still stands. I felt just a wonderful spirit Sunday, and I thank the Lord for that. And I believe we know you just can't outgive God. And I just hope you're taking the challenge serious this week. It's something to think about. Reach out to somebody and help them out. If you will, let's be turning to Hebrews chapter 11. Just going to look at one verse in Hebrews, but many verses in Genesis, because we're going back there. I was thinking while there's practicing that song over and over, you kind of have a natural cadence that you want to do. I used to sing in the choir and what have you, and sometimes these songs are tricky, Brother Nathan. You know, it's like one of those. I was thinking, you know, that'd be the song I'd be singing in my head going down the road, and then you know, you got to hit that right. You know, it's like that because you get used to it. But you'll kind of see this throughout tonight. It's easy to get caught up in what I would call tradition, or what we've always done. It's easy to get caught up in that. I've seen that at work probably more than anywhere else. People kind of get used to a routine, and they like a routine. It's simple. People want to know kind of what to do. You have a routine, and it's like, this is what we do, and you just kind of have that same cadence. You follow that same routine, but then sometimes there's a rest in there, or sometimes there's something in there that changes what you would think would be there. And I think for me, if there's a change in leadership, a lot of times that means that they might come in, the new leader might come in and say, I want to do something different. And boy, that disrupts everything. That just tears everything up, you know. And some people like it. Some people are adaptable, and some people aren't adaptable. Some people are set in their ways and kind of know, we always do it this way. Why are we doing it like this? Because last year we done it like this. You've all heard that. You know how it is. But you'll see tonight that God is doing something different. He's not doing it like it's always been done. And that disrupted things. It disrupted this family dramatically. And it's just amazing how we revert back sometimes to either the way that we logically think we should do it, or revert back to the way that tradition says we do it, or the way that it's just been done. But we see here the Lord did something different. And you go from the law into grace, you see the Lord did something different. And it's just a wonderful thing to see when you read that one little verse in Hebrews, because I'll be honest with you, I was kind of worried about this lesson more than maybe some of the others, because I couldn't recall the lesson to mind. And I just remember praying, like, Lord, really help me to get this, because it's one little verse in Hebrews, but I don't want to mess up the account that you have in Genesis. And there's a lot that's going on when you look at the founding of the nation of Israel. There's a whole lot going on, and it was very much a family situation. It didn't start with an entire nation. It started with a couple. And that became the larger than the sand of the seas and the stars of the skies, as the Bible teaches here. But you see, there was a lot of trouble along the way. God used people just like you and me. I don't think we see it that way a lot. You think of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. I know for the Jewish people, their forefathers, they really hold them in high esteem, but they were not perfect people. You can see that throughout. And when you read Hebrews chapter 11, verse 20, it says, by faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. And that sounds very simple. I read that and I thought, well, what a blessing. That is good. But when you go back and you actually read the account of what happens in Genesis chapter number 27, if you will, turn there. I do want to go through that chapter and kind of read some things, and I think it'd be good for us all to kind of refresh all of our memories on this lesson here. When God has a way that he's going to do something or makes a promise in a certain way, it's not for two things: you and I to help him along, or you and I to change it to the way we think it should be. It's always best to let God do it his way. But I was trying to remember, because when I read this, I was kind of confused. I was like, now, why is it that Isaac was giving the blessing Why was he giving it to Esau first, and why? Like, what the reason why? You got to know the why to understand the concept of it. And I was thinking, what is wrong with that? Sister Ashley is trying to like, what is wrong with that? I mean, he is blessing, making a promise to his oldest son. What's wrong with that? In Jewish history, who was the one that was to carry on the family? It was the eldest. A lot of times that's carried over into what you see historically or traditionally. Today, a lot of times it's the eldest is the one that's supposed to look after the rest of the family after maybe a mother and father have passed on, and maybe the inheritance goes to the eldest to kind of see the business taken care of. And when I read this at first, I was like, what is wrong with this? How did Isaac mess up in doing this? And so I went back and I started looking. I'm like, Lord, help me, because I'm trying to see where he failed here. But I'm going to read a couple of verses or a few verses here in Genesis chapter 25 just to remind us of how this came to be. Genesis 25:19. And it says, these are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham begat Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian of Padan Aram, and sister of Laban of Syrian, the Syrian. And Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren, and the Lord was entreated of him, and Rebekah his wife conceived. And the children struggled together within her. You remember this account here. And she said, if it be so, why am I thus? Why is this happening? And she went to inquire of the Lord. And take note of this verse here. And the Lord said unto her, two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels. And one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. Now see, everything that takes place after this hinges on that promise of God. Don't forget that. Everything else, that is the way God set it in motion. That's different than what tradition would say. That's different than what people did historically. But God set it in motion here in this verse 23. And when her days were to be delivered, were fulfilled, behold, there was twins in her womb. And the first came out red all over like an hairy garment. And they called his name Esau. And after that came his brother out. And his hand took hold on Esau's heel. And his name was called Jacob, and Isaac was 80 years old when she bare him. And so when you see what takes place here, the rest of this, I'll for sake of time, I'll not read the rest of this chapter, but it explains their characteristics and their personality, who they were like, or what they were like. You see that Esau was a hunter, he was a man of the field, and I'd say what you call probably a man's man, and Isaac liked that. Isaac liked his eldest son, and it's not that maybe he didn't love his other son, but he liked his eldest son, and he wanted to be with him, and they shared those things together. Now, what was different than Jacob, he was a different type person, and Rebekah loved him. He was more so of one that would be in the house with mom. So you kind of see how their personalities kind of at the very beginning kind of took off. This is my pal that I hang out with. This is her pal that she hangs out with. And here's the thing. Just know this, that regardless of what human relationships are, regardless what tradition says, what God says or what he promises is how it's going to be. When I look back on this, and you'll see how all the different things transpire after this, but after God making this promise, why did they not teach that from the beginning? You know, if I went a lifetime thinking things were going to be one day, traditionally one way, if somebody knew that it was going to be a different way and they didn't tell me, and then later on in life, I would probably be very confused or maybe hurt. Why did it happen like this? I'm the oldest. I'm supposed to receive this blessing, and now I'm learning that I'm not going to have it. Why? You know, if it's one of those things that maybe, because the Lord told her here, there's two nations in thy womb, there's two different type personalities here. And why was that not taught? Why was that not explained? That's just one of the questions that I have when I look at it. When I see a conflict, I go back and I look what could have potentially made that conflict not a conflict. How could it have been avoided? You know, when God teaches us something or says something, it's important that we teach our youngins, our kids, that way. There's enough out there on TV and everything else that kind of portrays things in a certain way, rewriting of history or changing it to be a certain way, but God didn't change. It's the same. And I know it goes without saying, but it is crucial that we teach our kids what the Bible says versus anything else. That they see that and they understand that. They know that. So there's no surprises in the future. Well, I didn't know. Well, it's right here. It's up to us to teach our kids. And these things that maybe are not so popular or things that are not so well known, it's good to get in there and again cultivate through those things. God has His plan and His promise, and He's got a place for all of us. It's just that we are supposed to follow His promise and what He says. So if we go over to chapter 27, just a page over, we're going to kind of see how this plays out. Again, Esau, I guess he had it in his mind. I don't know how much thought he took in verse number 23 or the promise that was given there. And, you know, the heart wants what the heart wants. I guess if there's bonds or things with people or what have you, or just that really when you just love somebody, you want the best for them, and you might try to do more than what you're supposed to or go against God to try to have something. And that's just not how it's going to be. When God promises something, and I think what we should do, how we should respond to that, is wait and see how He answers His promise. Not trying to force it along or help it along. We saw that with Sarah and Abraham. Let me say it like this. A person can try to do the right thing, but absolutely be doing it the wrong way. And that's a reoccurring thing. A person could be in the right, but do it the wrong way. If I know that a certain thing is supposed to take place, but I use deception to make it take place, do you think that's God's will? God doesn't use deception. God doesn't deal with liars. He hates a liar is what the Bible says. He doesn't deal deceitfully. He says it and He sees it through. He's righteous and He's all-knowing. But we see when people get involved, we mess things up. This is probably around, I guess this is Faith Part 7 or maybe 8 now. And I just entitled this one kind of a subtitle of Family Fraud, just to kind of put it in your mind. It definitely was a family feud by the time it was all said and done, but family fraud. People wanting to try to make things happen their way regardless of what God said. And look what it did to this family. So if we're in Genesis 27, if you look through verses 1 through 4, you're seeing Isaac, again, one of the forefathers, somebody that was supposed to be matured, well-versed with God, a faithful follower of God. But we see what happens here as he's coming to the end of his life. And maybe he wasn't thinking clearly, but we're seeing this time in his life. And it says, "And it came to pass that when Isaac was old and his eyes were dim, so he could not see, he called Esau, his eldest son, and said unto him, My son. And he said unto him, Behold, here am I. And he said, Behold, now I am old. I know not the day of my death. Now therefore take, I pray thee, thy weapons, thy quiver and bow, and go out in the field and take me some venison, and make me savory meat, such as I love, and bring it to me, that I may eat, and that my soul may bless thee before I die." You see this here, if he didn't remember that promise or what was given to Rebekah, he's going against what God had already promised. He's following what he wanted. You remember he was close to Esau here and he loved the meat. And what you're seeing is how he was pleasing the flesh. He was taking care of the flesh. This is what I really want. This is I'm getting ready to die. I would love to have this meat maybe one more time and have this special meal. And Esau, if you would just do that for me, that would be just so wonderful. And then I will give you the blessing. It's a win-win. Everything sounds good. When you read it like that, if you don't know the context of the last chapter, you read it like that, it sounds like everything's good. But it's going in direct opposition of what the Lord said. So that's not how it's supposed to be. He said, go and do these things. This is what I want. This is what I'm asking for. Please make this happen. And Esau was more than happy to do that. I know that he loved his father. There was no question about that. But you remember about his birthright, he was probably more a man of the earth, an earthly man. He's probably more interested in physical things than he was in spiritual things. If you go back and look at his nature, see, God has a reason why he does the things that he does. He got hungry and he wanted for a morsel of meat, I believe it says, and he sold his birthright. Jacob, I tell you, he's a cunning man. We'll see a little bit more about him. And you know, later on in life, he finds out with his uncle that he is not the most cunning, I guess you'd say, in the family. There are different things happen to him. But as we go down to verse number 5, we see that there's a plan being devised because Rebekah, again, the family fraud that's going on, Rebekah heard this conversation between Isaac and Esau. And she wanted her favorite to receive the blessing. She wanted this, so she was thinking, how can I make this happen? Verse number 5. And Rebekah heard when Isaac spake unto Esau his son, and Esau went to the field to hunt for venison and to bring it. And Rebekah spake unto Jacob her son, saying, behold, I heard thy father speaking to Esau thy brother, saying, bring me venison, and make me savory meat, that I might eat, that I may eat, and bless thee before the Lord before my death. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice according to that which I command thee. Go now to the flock and fetch me from thence 2 good kids of goats, that I will make them savory meat for thy father, such as he loveth. And thou shalt bring it to thy father, that he may eat, and that he may bless thee before his death. And Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, behold, Esau, my brother, is a hairy man, and I am a smooth man. My father peradventure will feel me that I seem to him as a deceiver, and I shall bring a curse upon me and not a blessing. And his mother said unto him, upon me, for upon me be thy curse, my son, only obey my voice and go fetch me them. She was willing to deceive her husband and include her son to make something else happen. He's saying, here, I know what's going on here. We're going to devise a plan. It's almost like Jacob was the one that was having the voice of reason. Like, no, wait a minute, let's don't do this. He's going to find this out, and he's going to find us out, and it's just not good. We just see this as the wrong way to go about things. And they were trying to, again, steal the blessing. That just doesn't sound like a good thing, does it? I mean, just really slow down and think about it. When I think about God's chosen people, and they are, why did they go through all this deceit? Why did they just not let it happen the way God said it was going to happen? This is a reoccurring event. We see it go over and over, but you know, there's also that human element. People are human. These people were human just like you and I. They heard this is going on, and Rebekah was thinking, my son is going to be left out of this, which probably she might have thought, which means I'm going to be left out of this. If I'm to receive, or if Jacob was to receive this blessing, and then I might have a better chance of having more out of this also. There's probably some self-preservation maybe there that was going on, but it was defrauding in the family and breaking things up. And you see here in verses number 14 through 19, Jacob decides to go along with it. And he went and he fetched and he brought them to his mother. And his mother made savory meat, such as his father loved. And Rebekah took goodly raiment of her eldest son Esau, which were with her in the house, and put them upon Jacob, her younger son. And when she put his skins of the kids and the goats upon his hands and upon the smooth of his neck, and she gave the savory meat and the bread which she had prepared into the hand of her son Jacob. And he came unto his father and said, my father. And he said, here am I. Who art thou, my son? And Jacob said unto his father, I am Esau, thy firstborn. I have done according as thou hadst me. Arise, I pray thee, and sit and eat of my venison, that my soul may bless thee. You see, he lied to him. He went out and he dressed up to be like his brother. I mean, that sounds just like something you'd probably see on a TV show or a science fiction type story. This was all for the blessing. This was all for financial gain. This was to obtain something. You see the defrauding that's taking place. And also here, you look back here at verses 20 through 29, a lot of reading tonight, but we'll finish through here. It said, "And Isaac said unto his son, How is it thou hast found it so quickly, my son? And he said, Because the Lord thy God brought it to me." Now that's a pretty sly remark, don't you think? I don't think the Lord had anything to do with that. You see, that was the deception part. Deception will raise its head, and you got to watch things here. And he's trying to smooth things over with his dad here. "And Isaac said unto Jacob, Come near, I pray thee, that I may feel thee, my son, whether thou be my very son Esau or not." He was skeptical. He's trying to be wise. "And Jacob went near unto Isaac his father, and he felt him, and he said," listen to this, "and he said, The voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau." You know, I'd say at that point, Jacob is probably getting a little bit nervous about what was going on, and dad's getting ready to find me out just like I told mom. But he saw this through. He saw this deception through. You look back and see we'll see Esau's response here in just a minute. And he discerned him not, because his hands were hairy, as his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him. And he said, "Art thou my very son Esau?" And he said, "I am." And he said, bring it near to me, and I will eat of my son's venison, that my soul may bless thee." And he brought it near to him, and he did eat, and he brought him wine, and he drank. And his father Isaac said unto him, "Come near now, and kiss me, my son." And he came near, and he kissed him. That's a very sign of deception, if you remember that, with Judas. Often in the Bible, when you read back and see that, that is absolutely a mark or symbol of deception. "And he smelled the smell of his raiment and blessed him, and he said, See, the smell of my son is as the smell of the field which the Lord hath blessed. Therefore God give thee of the dew of heaven and the fairness of the earth and plenty of corn and wine. Let the people serve thee, and nations bow down to thee, the Lord over thy brethren, and let thy mother's sons bow down to thee. Cursed be every one that curseth thee, and blessed be he that blesseth thee." You see, now he has passed this blessing on unknowingly to his youngest son. He didn't know that that's what he was doing. He was thinking that he was passing this along to his eldest son, but I have to just pause there and think, did he not think back to what God said? Did he honestly think that he was going to outdo what God had promised? When you read this without knowing that former information about how the promise came to be, you might think, well, this is how it's supposed to be. And what is so troubling about this is how Rebekah and Jacob were so conniving in the whole situation. See, the whole thing is messed up. It's just not right. Both sides have problems to it. Jacob was not holding on to the promise. And to be honest with you, Isaac was not holding on to the promise that God had given. To be honest with you, Jacob and Rebekah weren't either. For them to go to the lengths that they went to try to make this happen, they're saying, "God, I don't believe, I don't trust that you're going to make this happen. I have to make this happen." When the very promise of Isaac came along, when God promised Sarah that there would be a son, she said, "I don't believe that you're going to make it happen. I have to make it happen." Anytime we get out in front of God, we're going to make a mistake. We're going to mess up, even if our intentions are pure. And you see a lot of non-pure intentions here. They wanted to make things happen. The flesh is a hard thing to deal with. I know I'm not telling you older ones or people that have got experience or things. I know I'm not telling you anything when I say that, but you better keep your flesh in check and not let it get away from you. You know, the Lord laid this on my heart. It's truly like a wedge. I tell you, it breaks my heart to see people make mistakes. I'll put it that way to start out with. You know, Brother Dale, if I go out and I make a bad choice in the moment, I can make a bad choice. I can make a mistake. But you know, there comes a time when you've got enough information and enough knowledge in front of you, you're not making a mistake, you're making a choice. You're absolutely making a choice to go against what you know is right and what is wrong. You're choosing to do wrong. There's times when people, they say they know in their heart that God would not have me to do this, but my flesh wants me to have this. And now you've got two things you've got to decide. Now, do I push that away and say, I know that that's wrong. I know God does not want me to do that. Or do you start entertaining that idea? See, that's what happens. You entertain the idea just a little bit. And then your flesh starts feeding it. It just kind of piles it on and just says, look, this will be so great. This will be just such a wonderful thing. If you just kind of help it along just a little bit, you'll have all the things that you desire. You'll be happy. That's probably the big thing. If you just had this one thing that you're missing in your life and you add this to it, you would just be so happy. That's what the flesh does. But see, the flesh doesn't know. Flesh doesn't know what God knows. God sees it all. When God makes a promise, the best thing you and I can do is hold on to that promise. Embrace that promise and take it. Not let the flesh take us along somewhere. There comes a time, everybody in this room has, and everybody in this room will have to make a decision. A right and wrong decision. Do I do this, knowing that it's wrong, and I could probably get away with it maybe, but do I do this, or do I shun the very appearance? I'm telling you, if you start flirting with that, it's going to cause you problems. I promise you that. You say, preacher, that's boring. I'm telling you, that's where the rubber meets the road. The little things on up to the big things, that's where the rubber meets the road. Slowing down and saying, I know this isn't right. If you're born again and you're saved and you've got that inner dwelling in your heart and you've got these decisions to make, sometimes they shouldn't be as hard as what we make them. We're entertaining the flesh way too much. We're giving in to the flesh way too much. Lord wouldn't have us to do that. We see this here. We saw this with Abraham and Sarah. Now we see this with Isaac. We see this with his entire family, what is going on. They're entertaining this idea. How do I make things happen the way I want it to be? And you know, both sides were wrong. But what's the one thing that prevailed? God's promise. That's an amazing thing when God makes a promise, a one-sided promise. If he's the one, it's not a contingency on how we respond. If he makes the promise, it's going to happen if we like it or not. He's the one that sees it through. I want us to see that and know that. You see here his response and how he was betraying his father. And you see kind of the response that comes here. We look at verses 30 through 36. We're seeing Esau now returns back to the scene, doing what he was asked to do, probably very excited. I don't know if he knew of this promise, probably not, that was made back in Genesis 25. But it says here, and it came to pass, as soon as Isaac had made an end of blessing Jacob, and Jacob was yet scarce gone, he just left. I mean, you look at the timing of things. If he'd been there just a few minutes before, he'd saw what had happened. It'd still been too late. The blessing had been conferred. Gone from the presence of Isaac, his father, and Esau, his brother, came in from his hunting. And he also had made savory meat and brought unto his father and said unto his father, let my father arise and eat of his son's venison, that thy soul may bless me. And Isaac, his father, said unto him, who art thou? And he said, I am thy son, thy firstborn Esau. Now you know that's probably very confusing to Isaac in that moment, and he begins to tremble. It says, and Isaac trembled very exceedingly and was sad and said, who? Where is he that hath taken the venison and brought it to me? And I have eaten of it all before thou camest and have blessed him. Yea, and he shall be blessed. And when Esau heard the words of his father, he cried with a great and exceeding bitter cry and said unto his father, bless me, even me also, my father. Don't you have something left for me? Bless me also. You see, that's not how the inheritance worked. It was all encompassing. Verse 35, and he said unto thy brother, with subtlety hath taken away thy blessing. And he said, I like this verse here. And he said, is not he rightly named Jacob? That means subtlety, or he was a heel grabber. He's the one to trip you up. He would use deceit. His name was very... what Esau is saying here, he is named very well. And he said, is it not he rightly named Jacob? For he hath supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he hath taken away my blessing. And he said, hast thou not received a blessing, reserved a blessing for me? Don't you have something left for me? And you see Esau's response here. And Esau answered and said unto Isaac answered and said unto Esau, behold, I've made him thy lord and all his brethren have I given to him, his servants. With corn and wine have I sustained him. And what shall I do unto thee now, my son? And Esau said unto his father, Hast thou but one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also. O my father, and Esau lifted up his voice and wept. And Isaac his father answered and said unto him, Behold, thy dwelling shall be the fatness of the earth and of the dew of the heaven above. And by the sword shalt thou live, and shalt thou serve thy brother. And it shall come to pass, when thou shalt have the dominion, that thou shalt break his yoke from off thy neck. You see here, talking about the family fraud, you see how things have taken place. Now you've got the father actually speaking against his other son. He's pitting the sons against each other. He's talking about war. He's talking about how that there be division between these two brothers. Now what did God say at the beginning? He's talked about those two nations. You look at the nation of Israel now, you see what's taking place over there. You see it. I mean, the Bible is just revealing itself before our eyes. You see how those two nations, how you have the northern kingdom, you have the southern kingdom, you see how there's division. And Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing wherewith his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, The days of mourning for my father are at hand. Then will I slay my brother Jacob. And these words of Esau, her elder son, were told to Rebekah, and she went and called Jacob, her younger son, and said unto him, Behold, thy brother Esau, as touching thee, doth comfort himself, purposing to kill thee. He's right now devising a plan. He's biding his time until his father passes away, and then he's going to come, and he's going to kill you. He's going to come after you. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice, and arise. Flee thou to Laban, my brother, unto Haran, and tarry with him a few days until thy brother's fury turn away, until thy brother's anger turn away from thee, and he forget that thou hast done what thou hast done to him. Then I will send and fetch thee from thence. Why should I be deprived also of you both in one day? Rebekah said unto Isaac, I am weary of life, because of the daughters of Heth, if Jacob take a wife of the daughters of Heth, such as these, which are of the daughters of the land, what good shall my life do me? One thing that I'm closing with this here, and I thought this was kind of interesting. Jacob, how the situation, he had listened to his mother, and he put himself in, and he followed through with it the way that he did. And what happens here, he's told to flee to go to Laban. You remember Laban, call him Uncle Laban, and how he had to serve so many years for his wife. Laban kept tricking him. You know, life has a way of returning what you do to back to you again. But there's one thing here I wanted to make note of too that I thought was kind of interesting. As much as Rebekah loved her son Jacob, when he sent her away, sent him away for just a few days, what was going to be a few days, to keep him safe, ended up being longer than that. And she actually died, and she never got to see her son again. This was it for her. Sin comes with the price. But I also kept reading, and I see there that Jacob and Esau later reconcile, and there's a lot more that could be said along this family line here. And I know, trust me, I know that's a lot to take in. Go back and study it the rest of the week. But I thought that was... thought that was a pretty interesting story. You read one small verse there. The Lord got what he promised, what you see there in Hebrews, but you kind of see the long story behind it, the deception and the human element behind it there. But we'll stop there tonight. Appreciate your good attention, but we have also come to pray tonight, and I'll ask if there's any objects or any updates or